Thanks for downloading this podcast from BBC Radio 4.
This is the Harwell Decatron computer. This is the world's oldest original working electronic digital computer. This computer is going to be used by scientists at Harwell to help them develop some of the first atomic reactors.
The history of computing is dominated by the hardware, from huge room-sized machines like the Harwell Decatron here at the National Museum of Computing to the never-ending quest for greater speed and computer power. It makes it really easy to forget that without the languages to communicate with these machines and to get them to do things, they'd be totally useless. And it's this history that we'll be telling in this series, exploring how we learned to talk to the machines. Here in the software gallery is a family tree, a diagram charting all of the major programming languages. But look to the far left, where the timeline begins, and there's just one language. Before anything else, there was Fortran.
Fortran represents the most advanced coding system available today.
Fortran is the sort of language that Dr. Strangelove would have used. If you think of Bach as being the most mathematical music, then Fortran is like Bach played on a hurdy-gurdy, very functional.
I used to amuse myself by writing Sudoku-solving programs in Fortran. It took me about an hour to write one that would solve any Sudoku in about a millisecond.
Until Fortran, our relationship with computers was on their terms. But in the mid-1950s, we decided to fix that power dynamic and to get the machines to dance to our tune. And as soon as that happened, our technological progress went turbo. Nuclear power, space exploration, and all those other triumphs of science and engineering that happened in the second half of the 20th century. Before Fortran, there was no poetry in programming. This was the height of the Cold War, and computing was a serious business.
In those days, computing was scientific. You were solving equations and things like that.
Barbara Alexander was one of the pre-Fortran programmers at the Harwell Atomic Power Research Lab, where the Decatron was the background music for her first dance steps into computing.
Originally, I took a maths degree at Cambridge. It was normal when you got towards the end of your time there to go to the appointments board to look for jobs. I went to the women's appointment board and they said, oh, you're a woman and you've done maths, so you will want to teach. I said, no, I won't. I would be an appalling teacher. I walked out and went over to the men's appointment board and I said, I'm quite interested in working at Harwell. Can you lead me in that direction?
Barbara was clearly highly qualified.
I was put on to working on the IBM 704 machine. When writing a program for the 704, it was basically a punch card machine. And every instruction was on a different card. And you'd have maybe 4,000 cards. You fed these into the machine, saw what happened. And this machine, we were working in machine code.
Programming was low-level, hand-to-hand combat. In other words, rather than playing the keys, you were inside the piano hitting the strings with hammers yourself.
I'm Ron Bell. I'm retired now, but I spent most of my career specialising in high-performance computing. If I could just explain briefly what actually happens when you program a computer. What the computer itself sees is simply a string of binary bits, you know, zeros and ones. I mean, that's what they run on. No human being is going to understand that. You would call that machine code.
Symphonies would come later. At this point, there were plenty of bum notes.
It was very difficult. It was very slow. And the sort of the reactor code I was working on, I think, took about a year.
When you're playing the piano, you don't care how the key connects with the string. What Barbara and her team wanted was to put down their hammers and just play. But they were stuck inside, too busy dealing with the mechanics to let the instrument sing.
If I'd had a high-level language, then I would have probably got it working in 2 weeks.
High-level languages allow you to write your program in a form of English.
technology writer Rupert Goodwin.
So instead of having to remember what the special code was to add two numbers together, you could just say add one number to another.
Fortran permits the user to write in a language which is closely related to that of mathematics.
The earliest Fortran, which was really one of the very first high-level languages, wasn't that far removed from the computer hardware. So it was a fairly thin layer of English over the alien language underneath.
Although Fortran was still clunky, it let Barbara put down her hammer and get out from the back of the piano.
Fortran was absolute bliss. Sorry, I should say more, shouldn't I? Using Fortran was absolutely wonderful after you had been using machine code.
Sure, you still needed to be a mathematician to program, but it was their language, not that of the machine, which meant they could start to incorporate a higher level of elegance, sophistication, beauty into the questions they wanted to ask. They could play the keys without needing to know how they were attached to the strings. And that, if you follow the metaphor, is what makes a high-level language different from a low-level one. Fortran introduced the concept of a compiler, a program that translates what you want into machine code.
Card reader begins, calling in our program which we wrote. Then the translation takes place. Our machine language program.
It's there to express engineering mathematical concepts. So that very much defines what it looks like. It's not the sort of programming language that you'd write a web server in, or a computer game, or anything that had anything to do with real humans. If you can imagine a huge Scrabble board covered in uppercase letters and numbers set out in strange blocks, that was pretty much it. It was designed to be put into punch cards, it was designed to be formatted in columns, and it was designed to do quite a lot of complex mathematics first and foremost.
Fortran. It sounds like something spelled backwards.
Fortran was composed after years of effort by a team at IBM led by John Backus. In 1982, the company spoke with that team for a film celebrating its 25th anniversary. Here's John.
I'd come in with the today's name, and they would all say, "Oh, God, Backus, no."
And one day he came in and he says, "I've got it. Formula translation? Fortran." And I went, "Ugh."
The people I have known who have made great innovations, Nobel Prize winners I've known, Von Neumann, John Backus, there are very few people like that.
Well, John Backus was a kind of a restless young man, very bright, but my name is Paul McJones. I had the good fortune to work with John Backus in the mid-70s. That's where I first learned about his involvement at Fortran. It was one of the first programming languages I learned back in the 60s. When he was not motivated, he could be, as he said in his own words, lazy. He really was always looking for the strong motivation. He wasn't finding it in school until just before he finished there. He was walking down the street in Manhattan and saw the IBM building with a big fancy computer behind the glass. He decided to go in and just see what it was. And he was wearing his sweater with a hole in the sleeve. And as he was being given the demo of the computer, he mentioned he was a grad student at Columbia, nearly finished and looking for a job. So they took him upstairs and gave him an interview and offered him a job on the spot.
It was very informal. When I thought that we should try to make this Fortran system.
At that time, IBM had a dress code, and yet John would be there in his blue jeans, which is the way it is for everybody now in Silicon Valley. But John was ahead of us by about 40 years. He said he was lazy, but that just meant that he didn't want to do repetitive things. He wanted to break new ground. And I think that had helped him to realize the problem of programming, sort of the cost, time to write programs, was going to be a big problem for them.
I said, "John, we can't simulate a human programmer. Like me, for example, I'm a great programmer."
The original team thought that they would be finished in 6 months. Instead, it took them about 3 years. And so the customers were ready. There were perhaps 30 or so copies of the computer that Fortran could run on. And then within 6 months, they were doing a lot of their new programming in Fortran because it was just such a dramatic increase in productivity.
Fortran greatly reduces the amount of preparation.
Fortran was an enabling technology that allowed the extraordinary pace of change that we witnessed in science and engineering in the post-war world. That is its beauty. See?
It was born in the Cold War, and it was designed for engineers, rocket scientists, and mathematicians. It was the sort of people who would have been on the Manhattan Project, the sort of people who were working for NASA, the sort of people who were building the defence systems. Now, these are the people who were taking Fortran, and they were at the front line of science and the front line of engineering, and often on the front line of the Cold War.
I first encountered Fortran when I was a research student at Oxford University. So I was a nuclear physicist before I became a computer performance specialist. I think it was being used for all of the big scientific and engineering projects. I mean, it was, of course, used for developing nuclear weapons and things like that, but it was used for weather forecasting. It was used for engineering analysis, for example, designing aircraft wings.
Fortran was really quickly adopted for system-critical functions like the guidance program and the Mariner space probes. Perhaps too quickly, though. All code is subject to bugs, and Fortran was certainly no exception. In one spectacular case, the Mariner 1 was ordered to self-destruct moments after launch in what Arthur C. Clarke called the most expensive hyphen in history. $135 million expensive. Back down on Earth.
Fortran was used for most of the major projects. Effect of smoking on cancer. Professor Pito at Oxford, they were using Fortran to process all the results of their surveys. That's one example. Absolutely vital stuff.
By this point, everyone was dancing to Fortran's tune. It was top of the pops, and it stayed there, at least for scientists and engineers. Of course, it evolved, and it's still in use today, especially where performance, raw number-crunching power, is the goal. Fortran has always remained exclusive to that club.
Fortran has a very specific culture. Because it was the first computer language, and it was developed in order to do really big science tasks, big engineering, military projects and all that, the people who were there first with it were really the creme de la creme, the uber boffins. That core nucleus of people attracted others who thought like them. And Fortran was always there, so people had to learn Fortran to get the keys to that kingdom. So it did tend to build up into an intellectual elite, and some of that is still there. If you want to be an astronomer, for example, you have to learn Fortran, because all the tools tend to be based around Fortran. So it's something you have to do to belong to that particular club. It's like joining the Masons.
There's a brilliant quote which I found in a magazine. At that point, someone had brought out "Real men don't eat quiche," and this little thing from the magazine is called "Real programmers don't use Pascal."
That's another programming language.
And to quote from it, back in the golden era of computers, it was easy to separate the men from the boys, sometimes called real men and quiche eaters. The easiest way to determine who the real programmers are is by the programming language they use. Real programmers use Fortran. And I think that does actually very much define the culture of Fortran.
In some sense, Fortran gave birth, first of all, to the whole idea of a higher level language, the idea that you write at the level of the kind of problem to be solved rather than at the level of the individual steps that a computer knows how to follow. And also basic building block ideas of programming languages. Other languages came along quite quickly and in many cases solved some of the same problems in a more elegant way, but the fingerprints of Fortran could be seen through pretty much all of the programming languages that followed.
Fortran was a step removed from the nuts and bolts. It was a conceptual leap in our relationship with the machines, but they were still the preserve of the boffin. It would take a 5'4" Navy admiral named Grace to put the machine in the hands of the masses. Tomorrow, on Codes That Change the World.
Star, come open, speech marks, hello world, close speech marks, and program hello.